Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is March the 28th, 2024. It has been 3,713 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 37 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 34 days since Russia expanded its war aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Wednesday and Thursday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. The Russia-Ukraine war report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers on social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission – the truth, because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. There are only small changes from yesterday, so if you want to skip ahead, it won't hurt my feelings. I won't even know you did it. 1. Russia is taking advantage of the United States' inertia to restart its campaign to destroy Ukraine's electrical infrastructure. 2. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, resulting in GPS jamming and airspace violations. 3. The filing of a motion to vacate against Speaker of the House Mike Johnson and the April 19th resignation of Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher has created a window of opportunity that could move U.S. military aid for Ukraine forward. 4. It is unclear if Ukraine has ended its systematic target of Russia's oil refining capability after pressure from the United States, with only one attack in the last 10 days. 5. Based on statements made by Russian President Vladimir Putin and his proxies and the actions and inactions of Ukraine's allies, the world remains in the early stages of the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 6. The second phase of the Russian 2024 winter offensive has reached its culmination point, and Russia is preparing for a summer offensive. 7. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. While there was fighting along the entire line of conflict, there were only a few significant developments to report. Just like yesterday, I can summarize the action report in two sentences. There was fighting in all the same places, and there was no change in the situation. Here are the major events that happened on the battlefield. In Kharkiv Oblast, the VKS, Russian Aerospace Forces, bombed the city of Kharkiv for the first time since 2022. Debris from two UMPB D-30SN turbine-assisted 250-kilogram glide bombs were used. I'll talk more about this new weapon in the theater-wide section. One bomb landed between a block of apartments, striking close to the community playground. One person was killed and 19 wounded, including 4 children. The second bomb landed near a school and caused significant damage. The settlement of Borova was bombed twice, once in the early morning by the VKS and in the evening by Smerch rockets fired by Multiple Launch Rocket Systems, MLRS. The rockets hit a kindergarten and 3 apartment buildings, killing a 12-year-old. On the night of March the 26th and the 27th, Izum was hit by 3 Shahed 136 one-way drones. A gym and school were damaged, and a security guard received minor injuries. On March the 27th, the last remaining resident of Yampolivka, a pensioner, was killed during Russian shelling. The village had a pre-war population of 200, and now it no longer exists. In northeastern Donetsk Oblast, 2 Russian S-300 anti-aircraft missiles used for ground attack struck the settlement of Liman. 3 apartment buildings, 3 private homes, the buildings of the Ukrainian National Academy of Medical Sciences, and the central railway station were damaged. To the southwest, Russia targeted the residential areas of Raihorodok with Smerch rockets containing cluster munitions. 8 homes were damaged and a pensioner was killed. An Iskander-M short-range ballistic missile hit a non-defense industry factory in the city of Mykolaiv. A 3-story building was heavily damaged and 8 people were wounded. 3 KH-22 air-to-surface supersonic anti-ship cruise missiles were launched at the Odessa region. There was no information on damage or casualties. 2 KH-31P anti-radiation missiles were fired during the approach of the cruise missiles and were disabled in flight. Additionally, at least 2 Shahed 136 one-way drones targeting a power plant were shot down. I do have more information about the situation in southwest Donetsk Oblast, where Russia is concentrating its combat potential. The intensity of Russian attacks in the Avdiivka area of operation, or AO, continues to be lower than in mid-March. The deputy commander of the 3rd Separate Assault Brigade of Ukraine, Maxim Zhorin, said, quote, "As of now, we have managed to slightly decrease the intensity of the enemy's offensive actions on the Avdiivka front. The Russians cannot conduct their offensive all along the front line here, being forced to localize their attacks." Unquote. Fighting continued on a line from Berdyche to Semenivka, east of Umanske, ending in the center of Tunenka. Russian forces made slight gains on the southern edge of Berdyche, and Ukrainian forces pushed further back into Tunenka, but not enough to update the map. Fighting was ongoing in Pervomayske, where the Russian advance stopped, and in the area of Nevelska. 21 of the 49 Russian-initiated ground attacks on March the 27th were in Novomikhailivka in the Vuhledar region. Fighting continued on the eastern edge of Georgievka and the southwestern edge of Pobeda with no changes. As previously mentioned, the heaviest fighting was in Novomikhailivka, where Russia is concentrating its available combat potential in the AO. The situation is difficult, with ongoing house-to-house fighting. Those are the big stories on the Ukrainian battlefront. The farmers' protest in Poland, supported by the Moscow-aligned Confederate Party, is losing momentum. 3 of the 6 Ukrainian-Polish border crossings are completely unblocked. The spokesperson for the State Border Guard Service of Ukraine, Colonel Andriy Demchenko, said, quote, "As of now, 3 directions, Krakivets, Shahini and Ustilugh, were unblocked, and they ceased their actions. They continue to block Yahodin, Rawa-Ruska and Dugrinyev." Unquote. The leader of the parliamentary group of the Agrarian Polish Peasants' Party, Krzysztof Paszek, told reporters that the border crisis could be coming to an end, with Kyiv and Warsaw, quote, "close to solving these problems together in dialogue." A draft agreement on the extension of duty-free trade between Ukraine and the European Union, taking into account the demands from Poland and France, was moving through the European Council. Here is my theater-wide update. On the night of March the 26th and the 27th, Ukraine shot down 10 of the 13 Shahed 136 one-way drones launched by Russia, with the remaining 3 striking Izum. Last night, 26 of 28 Shaheds were shot down, with 2 striking Zaporizhia. The Ministry of Defense of Ukraine released an outline of the update to mobilization laws that the Verkhovna Rada is considering. Men who are Ukrainian citizens aged 25 to 60 will be eligible for mobilization. Starting in 2025, basic military training will be offered at colleges and other secondary schools. Anyone eligible for the draft who is 18 to 24 will be required to complete a 3-month basic military training course before they turn 25, while the war continues. Men who are drafted by the mobilization law will receive additional training before deployment. The demobilization of eligible conscripts will start on April the 2nd and end on May the 31st. Because Ukraine is still under martial law, conscripts could not be released from military service, even if their contracts have expired, and they aren't allowed to fight unless they volunteer. Men who are released under the change in the law will receive a 12-month deferment from mobilization. Talking to student pilots, Russian autocrat Putin told them that Russia has no plans to fight against NATO, calling it, quote, "just a delusion." "We are talking about the same Russian Federation that said they weren't going to invade Georgia in 2008 or Crimea in 2014, and they certainly weren't going to expand their war of aggression against Ukraine in 2022. This is the same Putin who wrote a mini Mein Kampf in 2011 and then expanded it into an essay and a book in 2021. In his writings, Putin clearly states he wants to restore the borders of the Russian Imperial Empire. That's going to require going to war with NATO. Debris analysis from the new Russian UMPB D-30SN glide bomb found it is equipped with a turbine engine that increases its glide range, although its maximum range is unknown. The weapon is based on the FAB-250 bomb. The director of the Military Research Laboratory of Kyiv Scientific Research Institute of Forensic Expertise, Andriy Kulchitsky, said that the 3M-22 Zircon hypersonic surface-to-surface anti-ship missile only has a 40-kilogram warhead, less than half the size of KH-101 subsonic cruise missile. Debris analysis showed that a Patriot Air Defense System PAC-3 interceptor shot down at least one Zircon. While its transit speed is between Mach 8 and 9, approximately 9,000 km per hour, the missile needs to slow down to supersonic speed during its terminal approach, making interception by Patriot and SAMP-T air defense systems possible. Does it achieve hypersonic speed? Yes. Is it a true hypersonic weapon? No. Between March the 24th and the 25th, the Russian military has jammed the GPS signals on more than 1,600 commercial aircraft. Flights over Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Poland, Germany, Slovakia, Hungary, and the Czech Republic have been impacted, with Poland experiencing the most interference. A few flights in western Belarus were also jammed. Data shows that the only area not impacted is the Russian enclave of Kaliningrad. The NATO alliance charter does not consider GPS jamming on its own as an act of war. The World Bank will provide Ukraine with a $1.5 billion loan, supported by Japan and the United Kingdom, for humanitarian aid and reconstruction. Turkish arms manufacturer Repkon will begin production of 155mm shell casings in June at the General Dynamics Ordnance and Tactical Systems Factory in Mesquite, Texas. The Department of Defense also started negotiations to buy TNT. Germany announced it would transfer 10,000 rounds of 155mm ammunition within the next few days. This is the first of three planned deliveries. Poland announced that it was doubling its contribution to the Czech Republic-led ammunition initiative. The amount of the first tranche was not revealed, but was reported as substantial. Czech Foreign Minister Jan Lipavský also reported that Slovakia has contributed to the purchase of ammunition. Here is what's happening in the land of Mobix, Mobilization and Mir. The sales of antidepressants in Russia have reached the highest level in 5 years, increasing 33% from a year ago. Sanctions have also increased the cost, with Russians spending 45% more on the medications compared to 2023. Data shows that the birth rate in Russia dropped again in 2023, despite programs to encourage having babies and propaganda through state media. The rate fell to 1.41, the lowest point in 17 years, and well below the 2.10 rate required to maintain a stable population. Yesterday we shared a story about four neo-Nazis who harassed a woman at a Moscow subway station. News agency Astra is reporting that two of the four have been arrested. The video and report of the arrest caught the attention of the leader of the outlawed extremist organization Male State, Vladislav Pozniakov, who claimed that the video was a fake meant to discredit supporters of Russian nationalism. Pozniakov, a manly man's man and bodybuilder, bravely fled Russia to Montenegro in 2018 after receiving a 2-year suspended sentence for inciting hatred toward women. That conviction was later overturned, but the promoter of neo-Nazi adjacent with nationalism and Russian Mir decided, "No thanks, I'll stay in Montenegro." Russian human rights activist Alexander Verkhovsky told Bellingcat that while the Kremlin embraces neo-Nazis and nationalists such as the Rusich group, Male State was simply too radical. Wonderful Russian Mir. Finally, I have some economic news. The head of the Central Bank of Russia, Elvira Nabiullina, is reportedly negotiating her resignation. A formal announcement is expected on April the 26th, when the central bank will meet to consider changes to the interest rate, which was held at 16% on March the 22nd. Nabiullina is a close ally of President Putin, and prior to Russia expanding its war of aggression against Ukraine, she was on the Forbes 100 Most Powerful Women in the World list. The second-largest bank in the United Arab Emirates, Emirates NBD, closed all Russian bank accounts and stopped supporting transactions from the Russian Federation. The action was taken due to concerns about secondary sanctions from the EU and the US. The owner of the Binance crypto exchange Russian operations, COMEX, unexpectedly announced it was ending operations. Current users have until May the 10th to withdraw their crypto funds. The Kremlin had promoted COMEX to its citizens as a way to bypass sanctions and conduct foreign transactions. South Korean company Samsung announced that as of April the 3rd, Samsung Pay will no longer support the Russian Mir card. The Mir Pay app was already removed from the Google Play Store. Secondary sanctions implemented by the United States and the EU are starting to impact oil revenue for Russia. Russian exporters are reporting payments are being delayed, sometimes for several months. Banks have started to require written guarantees from buyers that sanctioned individuals or legal entities are not participating in their transactions, making it harder to buy Russian crude on the grey market. According to the publicly available information from Rosstat, during the week of March the 18th, Russian gasoline production was down 14.3% compared to the same period in 2023 and down 7.4% compared to the previous week. Russia was selling 15% of the gasoline it produced to foreign markets before the March the 1st export ban. In our assessment, regardless of protests from the United States, Ukraine should continue its campaign to cripple Russia's refining capacity. To try and fill the gap, Russia has been forced to import gasoline from Belarus, but the amount is a fraction of lost capacity. In the first 15 days of March, Russia received 3,000 metric tons of fuel, which is a struggle for the Potato Kingdom, which only has two refineries and has its own export customers. The Minister of Energy of Ukraine, Herman Halushenko, announced that Ukraine would not renew its natural gas transit agreement with Russia. At the time of publication, we had not assessed the potential impact on countries still dependent on Russian natural gas, including Austria, Hungary, and Slovakia. Russia's Gazprom saw profits decline 75% in 2023, and according to the Russian Academy of Science, may have become unprofitable. The state-controlled group believes the situation will only get worse in 2025. Microsoft is poised to leave the Russian Federation for good, with Russian license holders of their cloud services advised that access will be blocked by March the 31st. The shutdown was previously announced on March the 20th, but Microsoft extended the deadline at the request of IT company Softline PJSC. Cloud service providers Google and Amazon Web Services are expected to make similar announcements due to tightening EU and US sanctions. February data from the Center for Economic Strategy of Ukraine showed that Ukraine exported 6.5 million metric tons of grain, the largest volume since December 2021. Contrary to the claims of Polish farmers, exports by truck peaked over a year ago in October 2022. In February 2024, only 100,000 metric tons of grain were exported by motor transit through Romania, Moldova, Hungary, Slovakia, and Poland. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.